Biden administration attack on the First Amendment, wokeness continues to infiltrate our institutions. Biden, as well, will be blocking attempts from Cuban refugees to migrate to the United States. Georgia audit finds double-counted votes. And finally, more inflation news.
Beyond honored and humbled to be here today to help spread the message about the importance of youth vaccination. I'm in awe of the work President Biden and Dr. Fauci have done and was happy to help lend my support to this important initiative. It's important to have conversations with friends and family members, encouraging all communities to get vaccinated and actually get to a vaccination site, which you can do more easily than ever before, given how many sites we have and how easy it is to find them at vaccines.gov. Thank you, Jen, for having me today, and thank you all for helping share this important message. It's so appreciated.
Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in. I have a jam-packed show. As you can see, I am back. I am back in my studio. I was able to make a trip back home last night, so I'm not going to be doing the show, obviously, from, I was in Wildwood, New Jersey at that time. That's where I took my vacation, my short hiatus from the, from working. And now we are back today. That is Olivia Rodrigo. I've never heard of this girl before in my life until I saw this. She is some sort of a, I guess she's like a pop icon for the younger kids. I looked her up. She's 18 years old, so I don't really know. I think the Democrats like to kind of march people out there that are young, so you can't say anything to them. They have some sort of impunity from criticism. So they're doing everything they can right now. The big thing in the news in a general sense right now is attempting to shut down any type of dissent or objections to the COVID vaccines and COVID-19 and really the spread of COVID-19 and what they would deem as the spread of disinformation is what they're going for here, which is a blatant attack on the First Amendment. So I got this article from the New York Post. The DNC and Biden allies want phone carriers to vet anti-vax messages. I have so much more other than this. There's obviously the recent news about them talking about how they're going to work and collaborate with Facebook to shut down dissent about COVID vaccinations, as well as COVID or misinformation related to COVID, as they would deem it themselves, which is something they've been doing along the way. But now what they're doing is they're actually coming out and just blatantly saying that they're doing it. This was kind of known. This is not going to last, I think. I think once there's a court case on this, there is case law to support that private industry cannot be used and acquiesced by the federal government to enforce policy. Because then we really just have it. This is really just a copy. This is a copy straight from the playbook of the Communist Chinese Party. This is what the Communist Chinese Party does, the exact same thing. They take over business. They tell business what to do and how to spy on their own people. Now we're just, us ourselves, the communists in America, are just taking a plan straight out of their playbook and saying if it works for China, then maybe it can work here in America and we can get away and we can kind of subvert the Constitution in doing so. So that's really what their big plan is right now. This one came out, I want to say maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, this story. I actually have been able to take in more news over this last week because I was off. So I'd watch Fox News, I'd watch CNN, I'd be able to watch different news sources to kind of gain some information on the upcoming stories. This one's about how, it's written by Samuel Chamberlain. It's about how the DNC and other White House allies, they want wireless carriers to scrutinize people and social media messages for alleged misinformation, as they say, about the Biden administration's push to vaccinate more Americans. Now, this was reported on Monday by Politico. So this isn't like a conservative-leaning outlet, Politico, making this report. This is left-leaning. I've actually seen a lot of these stories. Some of them are coming out of the left-leaning outlets. So maybe it gets to a point where the press maybe has some sort of standard. Once you attack the First Amendment, then the press kind of has an idea that they can also be abolished as well. And maybe that's why they only, like, specifically will defend the First Amendment. I'm not exactly sure. So according to the outlet, as in according to Politico, the White House is pushing back harder against critics of its messaging after failing to reach the goal of having 70% of American adults receive at least one vaccine dose by July 4th. Part of that effort, Politico reported, is, and I'm quoting here, planning to engage fact-checkers more aggressively and work with SMS, as in short message service, carriers to dispel misinformation about vaccines. So when I say short message service, I mean your AT&T's, your Verizon's, your Virgin Mobile, if that one's still around, Sprint, T-Mobile, all of these phone companies, they want to work with them in coordination to shut down any what they would deem misinformation or disinformation about coronavirus vaccinations. So they are working, and this is, I mean, this is a huge infringement on the First Amendment. They're working so your text messages don't go through, and you can't talk to people, and you can't coordinate with people. This is like straight out of a communist manifesto playbook, this idea. And it's just going to get further. It's a snowballing effect. It'll work like a slippery slope. It will continue to get worse. They'll take away, oh, you can't talk about COVID vaccinations. Then next, it's, oh, you can't talk about gun rights. Oh, you can't talk about the government. You can't say anything dissenting about the government. It'll just continue. And if we have some of these media or these phone carrier companies, if we have them continue to acquiesce with the federal government, we're going to be in some serious trouble here. And really, I think the NSA... can really intercept these messages anyway. And now it's probably so easy for the federal government to be able to shut down these messages that they already have a plan of how to do so. And they're probably just telling these phone carrier companies like a Verizon or an AT&T, who are like the two biggest ones, they probably tell them, okay, so this is our method that we already devised because we already had this planned out that we were going to shut down dissent. So now I have Jen Psaki talking about, now this isn't only phone carriers. Now we're talking about doing it with Facebook, and Facebook's like the hugest social media platform they have out there with the biggest user base. This is her saying that they're going to be working with Facebook. Play clip two.
These social media platforms, and those engagements typically happen through members of our senior staff, but also members of our COVID-19 team. Given, as Dr. Murthy conveyed, this is a big issue of misinformation, specifically on the pandemic. In terms of actions, Alex, that we have taken, or we're working to take, I should say, from the federal government, we've increased disinformation research and tracking within the Surgeon General's office. We're flagging problematic posts for Facebook that spread disinformation. We're working with doctors and medical professionals to connect to connected medical experts who are popular with their audiences with accurate information and boost trusted content. So we're helping get trusted content out there. We also created the COVID community core to get factual information into the hands of local messengers. And we're also investing, as you all have seen, in the president's, the vice president's, and Dr. Fauci's time in meeting with.
Just the first address, man, she's a terrible public speaker. She's reading off of a sheet. She can't even get the words out reading off of a sheet. She's very incompetent, I've noticed, from what I've seen. It's always the same delivery, too, and she always, the way in which she delivers and illustrates is just, it always seems like it's the same. It's very weird. It's odd. Yeah, Jen Psaki, the government, and she really makes, she puts this on the government much more than she puts it on Facebook. She goes, oh, well, the government already has a plan. We're going to be flagging people. We have the Surgeon General's office telling us what we can and can't flag. As soon as we flag these posts through Facebook will take them down for us. So this is really just the government controlling speech. I mean, there's no other option here to call it. I don't know how the libertarians protect this. The libertarians have been standing up for big tech this entire time. Big tech, oh, well, just go to another company. Okay, well, when there's antitrust laws, when there's a monopoly on this social media-like system, you have AWS, the Amazon Web Services. They're the ones that give out the servers. So how is it that if you want to open up a new social media company like a Parler, how are you going to do that when everybody kicks you off the Play Store, everybody kicks you off the App Store, and then they kick you off their servers as well? How is this possible now? We're working in this where we have like four or five really big tech corporations that are controlling everything. So how is it that you consider this like a fair and free, you know, libertarians always talk about a fair and free market. How is it a fair and free market if there is no way that you can possibly compete in the market? You can't even get an entry point unless if you create an entire new market. They call it a parallel economy on the other side, because that's what you actually have to do if you want to become a new social media platform. Otherwise, you'll have the demise of Parler, like Parler did, where they came out. They said they believed in free speech. They got kicked off for that, and then they had to change everything around and change the executive board. I mean, they have a bunch of new people working there now just to attempt to bring it back to life. And they have this weird little review board, just like Facebook now, where they're flagging and taking down posts. So it's really not worth being on Parler either then. Really, that's that being said, we also have Facebook. I have this clip of Joe Biden where the media briefly asks him about Facebook, and hear what he has to say about Facebook. And this is a blatant, from the President of the United States, this is a blatant threat towards Facebook to do what it is he says, do what as I say, or else you're going to be hit hard with something from the government. Play clip 6.
What's your message to platforms like Facebook?
They're killing people. I mean, it really... Look, the only pandemic we have is among the unvaccinated. And they're killing people.
These Joe Biden clips just continue to get worse to the point where I think they're not real. Like, I think that they're fake because they're just so absurd and so ridiculous and unrelated. He's saying Facebook, other social media platforms are killing people, without elaborating on how they're killing people. I'm assuming what he wants is what he's trying to say and get across is, because Facebook and Twitter, YouTube, they're not flagging every single piece of content that objects to the opinion of what the establishment wants them to think, that in essence is killing people. If you don't listen to the government, then you are killing people, is what Joe Biden is saying. So these big tech corporations, when you make a veiled threat like that, when you say, so if you're saying you're killing people, what is the action to be taken by the government if they're killing people? Because you as the government have to somehow handle that situation, right? Because you guys are the big central planners in the federal government. So really that is a threat. That's a veiled threat. It's a passive aggressive threat, whatever you want to call it. It's a threat to these big tech organizations and companies saying you are allowing people to speak freely and they disagree with what the regime says, therefore you are killing people. This is something that is commonly taken, once again, out of a communist playbook. The path of good, what is it, the path to whatever is always paved with good intentions. The commies always make it like they really care about the people. Just give us a couple of your rights and we're going to take care of you. We saw this during the 1940s with FDR, where he took everyone's gold. He confiscated. He had the government confiscate everybody's gold because the people were weak at that time. They just wanted anything to survive. Their point right now is to beat down the middle class as much as they can without a revolt. Do it very slowly, very painfully. And do it in a way where it's much more subliminal and it's not obvious that the government is going after them. It's little step-by-step incrementations of tyranny that in essence eventually will get you to a point where you're hopeless and you have nothing and you will do anything for that piece of bread. You will do anything. You will let the government control you as long as you can continue to survive and live. But it has to be a very slow augmentation, very slow incremental process, because if it's quick and if it's swift, you're going to see people in the streets. You're going to see a lot of those doomsday preppers that have the food for a short period of time, and those people are going to be in the streets and they're going to take the government out themselves. That's really what their plan is here. They're going to do it as slowly, unfortunately, as painfully as possible. And this is just another way to do so. They want to do it through the big tech organizations. Jen Psaki now, she goes on to say in that exact same press briefing that I just showed you before, and this is really amazing, this is something else. She goes on to say that if you're banned from one, then you should be banned from all the platforms. Play clip 5.
providing for Facebook or other platforms to measure and publicly share the impact of misinformation on their platform and the audience it's reaching. Also with the public, with all of you, to create robust enforcement strategies that bridge their properties and provide transparency about rules. You shouldn't be banned from one platform and not others if you are for providing misinformation.
So now what we're really trying to do here is this is an implementation of a social credit score. Folks, everything I refer to will always be in the show notes, but also in the description below. I'm going to have my Rumble channel. I'll have my Anchor, which my Anchor is really the site that kind of disseminates the podcast. It disseminates the audio file amongst a lot of platforms. I'm pretty much everywhere. I'm on Amazon Audible. I'm on, iHeartRadio. Spotify is the big one, Apple Podcasts. I mean, I think another one's called Stitcher. I think I'm on there as well. I mean, I'm on pretty much, CastBox is another one. There's a bunch of different ones. I'm on like, you know, 8 or 9 different platforms. Just check it out there. If this show ever goes off, I mean, I know YouTube eventually, YouTube might take me down after this video because I'm going to briefly talk about the Georgia audit as well as some weird stuff kind of coming out of Maricopa County, Arizona. They're going to eventually take me off the platform. I mean, it's going to happen. I've already had my first strike. I'm not really worried about YouTube taking me off. I don't have enough of a viewer base. The money that I make doing this is so minimal, it doesn't even matter. This is something that I do just as an attempt to get the news out there. If it turns into something bigger, I love it. I'd love to continue to do this. But I like to talk about politics. This is what I like to do in my regular day life. So this is actually almost like a... this is a way to get that out without having to always talk about it. So I kind of do this show. I talk to all of you folks at home. I greatly appreciate the viewership. I really do. But I'll always be on this. I'll just be on either Rumble, whether it's Rumble, or I'll be on those podcast platforms. From here on out, those are the ones that I think I can rely on pretty solidly, especially the podcast platforms. There's 8 or 9 different ones. So it's going to be difficult for them to eventually shut me down. I'd have to have an Alex Jones like following for that to happen to me, and if I did by that point, I would already have my own proprietary site, so I really wouldn't have to worry about it. I'd be protected. I'd have security in that regard. But here, what Jen Psaki is really referring to, she's referring to like a KYC on social media. So a KYC is know your customer. When you invest, you investors at home know. KYC is related to giving your identity to these companies that you're investing with, whether you're investing in cryptocurrencies or you're investing in securities or ETFs, you have your 401k, all of that is lumped in with KYC that goes through the federal government. So they know their customer, they know who it is that's investing that money. So it makes it much easier at the end of the year to report, you know, taxes, and then for the IRS to catch people on tax fraud. Now, what they're pushing for here is they want to implement some sort of KYC-like program. So when you're on Twitter, they know you by your ID, they know you by your actual name when you're on these social media sites, and once they ban you on Twitter, then they ban you everywhere else at the same time. Because that's the only way that they would be able to implement this kind of policy. If you're banned on Facebook, then you're also banned on Twitter, because my Twitter, for example, isn't connected to my Facebook account. So they would if I totally change my name on Twitter, they would have no idea that that's me, and they can't verify that that is me. So they want to verify every, and in regards to Facebook and Instagram, there's certain things where Facebook, I actually have to be verified with my ID and all that stuff. I want to be able to run this podcast, or I want to be able to run the page if I want to pay for ads, if I want to do any of that. But in regards to like Instagram, some of these other ones, they haven't been verified yet. So if I say something messed up on Facebook, they kick me off Facebook. They can't kick me off all the other platforms. And that's what they want to do here. They want a system set up. It's like a social score, just like China. They want to know KYC. They want to know every single time you're on the internet. They want you to have a verification on everywhere you go. So when I sign on to the internet, I'm protected to an extent by my IP address. They have no idea who I actually am on the internet. My IP address, if you have a VPN, I highly suggest you to get one. They're pretty cheap. I think a year it's like $100 if you go with ExpressVPN. There's a lot of free ones out there as well. Yeah, so if I go on that VPN, they don't know who I am. They have no idea where. I could be saying I'm in Great Britain. I could say I'm in China. I could say I'm all over the place. They don't know who I am, right? What they want to do is they want to set up a system where when you log onto the internet, they always know who you are, what you're doing. And by doing that, they set up a social credit score program. And because of that, if you don't go on the sites that they approve of or they consider authoritative sources, then in essence, they can kick you off the internet, they can kick you off this site, that site, all these different platforms, because you don't agree with what the regime says. And that's what the steps that are going to be implemented going forward, because that's what the Chinese Communist Party has done. And I just don't know, and it'll be slow. Maybe we'll see this in a year, or we'll see it in 2 years. It's just going to continue to slowly, it's going to slowly snowball down. It's going to get worse and worse as we continue to go on here. And next, what I got, and Facebook, this is the company that everyone trusts to, you know, take down disinformation. Facebook recently, they reported that 52 employees were spying on users that they fired. This is a New York Post piece. Theo Waite is the author. So Facebook fired 52 employees for abusing their access to the social network's user data, including creepy men who obtained location data on women they were romantically interested in, according to a new report. Using their access to troves of user data through Facebook's internal systems, male engineers were able to view women's locations, private messages, deleted photos, and more, according to a bombshell report in The Telegraph. In one instance described in the report, a Facebook engineer was on vacation with a woman in Europe when the two got into a fight and the woman wanted time alone. Using Facebook data, the engineer reportedly tracked her down at her new hotel and confronted her. So yes, this is the most important part is, I mean, this story is ridiculous and these guys are dorks. They're really, these Facebook guys, these engineers, they're just a bunch of nerdy dork losers and they can't handle it. Like, girls don't want to talk to them, so they go on. So they go on their Facebooks and they track them creepily and they look through their photos. It's super weird. It's not surprising to me. The real problem is they have that much power. And the reason they have that much power is Mark Zuckerberg never changed the system, because Mark Zuckerberg was probably one of these nerdy engineer losers that had to check out what everybody else was doing, all the girls that rejected him in his life. And that's really why he created Facebook in the first place, is because he couldn't get girls like back in college. Which is, it's just, I mean, it's laughable. It's sad, but it's funny. But they have this kind of power. So if the government is working with them, you have to remember this now. If the government is working in collaboration with Facebook, now they know your location, just as it says in this article, because Facebook allows for that. They know your location. They know who you're romantically interested in. They probably know all of your messages going back and forth with people. I'm sure if they get your location, they pretty much know everything that's going on that Facebook account. Private messages. Oh, yeah, it does say private messages, deleted photos, and all that other stuff. So the majority of engineers who abused private information were men who looked up women they were interested in but did not confront them in person, according to the report, which is an excerpt from an upcoming book by New York Times reporter Shira Frankel and Cecilia Kang. While 52 employees were fired for such transgressions in 2014 and 2015, Facebook's then chief security officer Alex Stamos reportedly warned that hundreds of others may have slipped by unnoticed. Yeah, so Alex Stamos, I'm pretty sure, is a whistleblower now. He goes to the media and he tells them everything that Facebook was doing back in the day and all the spying on people that they were doing. So it was only in 2014 to 2015 you had 52 people. I can only imagine what it's like now. And all those employees that also got away with all of that. So the reason for this problem, the reason why Facebook, these engineers are allowed to, why it's not considered like some sort of confidential information and pretty much any engineer that works there can access this data, is because Mark Zuckerberg never changed it. So Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg was allegedly upset when he found out about the widespread abuse of user information and asked why no one else at the company had thought to tighten engineers' access to such data. But Zuckerberg himself had designed the company's data access system and refused to change it as the company grew, according to the report. So yeah, Mark Zuckerberg didn't care because he was probably doing the same thing when he was younger, because he's a little dweeb. VA, and this is to kind of get to the part where the left wingers and their wokeness has really started to infiltrate some more of our institutions. So the Veteran Health Services, through the VA, through the Department of Veteran Affairs, they go woke on their COVID numbers. This is a Judicial Watch piece. So the Judicial Watch, they announced that they received the 75 pages worth of records from the VA, and that's because they went for a Freedom of Information Act request. And now these 75 pages of records, they detailed the adverse reactions veterans had to the COVID-19 vaccines. Now, as of April 2021, reported 895 serious reactions, which included 20 cardiac arrests, 36 strokes, 15 cases of deep vein thrombosis, 10 heart attacks, and 19 pulmonary embolisms. They also reported over 26,000 less serious reactions. The agency withheld individual reports, report details, citing alleged privacy and related issues. So yes, there was a lot of issues with some of these vaccinations. It was kind of shut down by the VA. They didn't want anybody to know about it. It wasn't, I mean, insane amounts, but yeah, there was a problem for sure. And then it actually went through comprehensively, Moderna and this one and that one. From what I've seen, the Johnson & Johnson one seems to have the least, even though they somehow always, you know what I find is very weird? The liberal media always makes a point to attack the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but I think that's because that one is like a regular vaccination. It's not the mRNA vaccination. I'm not going to get into conspiracy theories about the mRNA. I've heard a lot of different things that by U.S. law, you can actually trademark or copyright, patent, if you will, artificial DNA, but you can't do it naturally occurring DNA. Now, this kind of creates an artificial like DNA, this mRNA vaccine. Therefore, people are saying that, you know, human beings can be patented and copyrighted and controlled by the government. I don't know exactly how true that is. I don't think the government has that kind of power where they can do that. They could say, in essence, oh, look at the US code. But if you look back at the Constitution, I would like to hope that our Supreme Court justices would be like, yes, okay, companies don't have the right to people's like lives and their literally their bodies. Now, in regards, it's weird though, because it seems like the media is always pushing the mRNA vaccines and just attacks the Johnson & Johnson vaccines all the time. But there's definitely issues with the mRNA vaccines as well. And the Johnson & Johnson one is that traditional flu-like, where they hit you with something that's a little a weaker version of the virus, and then your body's immune system creates the antibodies to fight that, and then in essence giving you immunity to that virus. So it goes on here, and that's just kind of a tailwind off. It's just weird that that the media is always reporting the problems from the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but it seems like the Moderna and the Pfizer shot are kind of just immune to all that. So now a section, and this is where it goes really woke, a section titled Addressing Health Inequities reports that the COVID vaccine allocation was prioritized to persons of color in part because of social injustices. So they were giving this vaccine allocation first to people of color, as in minority communities, I guess. So it goes on to state in this report, national U.S. data show that COVID-19 has disproportionately affected persons of color. This is attributed to social injustices that create a higher disease burden and shorter lifespan in this population. Attributed this partly to the concept of weathering, that lifelong exposure to the stresses of racial disparity and injustice manifests in greater physical and psychological disease burden and less ready access to quality health care and health related resources. In addition, persons of color are more likely to work and live in settings with high exposure to SARS-CoV-2, which is COVID-19, that is merely being Black or Hispanic or Native American does not cause one to more easily contract COVID-19. Rather, the lifetime social disadvantages experienced by persons of color make them more likely to have health problems that predispose them to contract COVID-19 and more often suffer serious or fatal outcomes. Thus, these individuals, along with others who are at risk for suffering serious or fatal illness due to the presence of comorbidities, will be prioritized for COVID-19 vaccine per the allocation plan as a consequence of risk factors. Yeah, notice how there's no science in here. This is all just conjecture. This is all surmise. This is all BS. They just made it up. Simply, what the liberals do is they look at outcomes. They never look at the very beginning of anything. They look at outcomes. They go, oh, well, there's a disproportionate amount of Black people dying from COVID-19 rather than white people. And they don't actually look at the outcome, why that is. They don't look at any lifestyle choices. They don't look at the way, they don't look at diets. They don't look at any of those other things. They also don't look at genetics. Maybe some people are more predisposed to be diabetic because of their family genetics and their family background. Same thing with obesity. Maybe they're more likely to be obese. Maybe their diet, if somebody's going every single day to McDonald's and the other person's eating really healthy and one person dies from COVID-19, you can't sit there and say it's based on their race. It could be based on certain lifestyle choices, and that's what they miss here. Because what the liberals do is they just look at the end result and then they go backwards. they look at the end result and they say, oh, because of this end result, there's some sort of systemic racism or systematic racism. We're going to blame it on the racial disparity injustice that has manifested over their greater physical and psychological diseases, and they've been burdened because of this. Whereas what the conservatives do is they look at, okay, so what's the base root? Like, why is this person in such bad health? We look at their diet, we look at their, you know, maybe when they were kids, they were fed like really, really bad food. We don't know any of this. So what they do is they take their ideas, they just take a giant umbrella and everything just falls under racism for them. And they'll find any way to justify it and legitimize it. And there's this weird kind of victim culture in America where it's good to be a victim. So other people kind of embrace the victimology. It's definitely weird for sure. The Biden administration asks the United Nations, and speaking of the wokeness, to evaluate American racism. CNBC article, it's written by Anika Kim Constantino. This is another dumb article. The Biden administration has invited United Nations experts on racism and human rights to visit the U.S. in an effort to address domestic racial justice and equality. And this is what Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, who got clowned by China because he's a hack, he stated, and I quote, "Responsible nations must not shrink from scrutiny of their human rights record. Rather, they should acknowledge it with the intent to improve. I urge all UN member states to join the United States in this effort and confront the scourge of racism, racial discrimination, and xenophobia, because when all people, regardless of their race or ethnicity, are free to live up to their full potential, our collective security is strengthened." So this is what my problem is. The United States has done more to further human rights, to further the human experience, and more for equality than any other country in the entire world. So we shouldn't be asking other countries that are nowhere near where we are in that process to evaluate America. This is just another cowtailing and capitulation to the left wing throughout the world, though. This is the worldwide left wing capitulation more than anything else. This just is not true. America has done way more work. America eradicated slavery, I think, one of the quickest at that time, especially when slavery was the rule. It wasn't the exception. They eradicated slavery faster than any other big-time nation like that did at that time. England had slavery for a very, very long time. I think they only eradicated it maybe 10 years before us, but they had it for hundreds and hundreds of years. Like, it was subjugation of people historically had always been a thing up until the 1800s. So you had, you know, thousands of years where subjugation of human beings and slavery was a thing that was just normalized. It was normal behavior. So the State Department has reached out to the UN Special Rapporteur on Contemporary Forms of Racism and UN Special Rapporteur on Minority Issues for an official visit. Blinken said in a statement, "Invitations to other UN experts who," and I'm quoting here, "report and advise on thematic human rights issues," end quote, "will be forthcoming." So yes, we have, if you want to talk about human rights issues from other countries, it's a whole different story that are in the UN. To be honest with you, we shouldn't have countries that have these huge human rights violations in the UN. That's why the UN is seen as a joke. The UN has a lot of these Middle Eastern countries that subjugate people in the council. They're part of the UN. So UN is really just, it's a big show. It's a fake. It's a fraud. It's a big show. It's somebody just putting on a show for everybody else to make it look like everybody's happy. And that's why I think that we should just completely get out of the UN. We should take money. We should take the funding away, because this is what the funding is going towards, is stupid woke shit like this. So this is Biden echoing. And if you remember when Jen Psaki was saying that these voting laws are racist and they're the worst thing since the Civil War to our democracy, this is Biden echoing that exact same idea, calling for civil war. Play clip 8.
There's an unfolding assault taking place in America today, an attempt to suppress and subvert the right to vote and fair and free elections, an assault on democracy, an assault on liberty, an assault on who we are as Americans. For make no mistake, bullies and merchants of fear, peddlers of lies, are threatening the very foundation of our country. It gives me no pleasure to say this. I never thought in my entire career I'd ever have to say it. But I swore an oath to you, to God, to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And that's an oath that forms a sacred trust to defend America against all threats, both foreign and domestic. The assault on free and fair elections is just such a threat, literally. I've said it before. We're facing the most significant test of our democracy since the Civil War. That's not hyperbole. Since the Civil War. The Confederates, back then, never breached the Capitol, as insurrectionists did on January the 6th.
So yes, Biden, they will continue to trance out. They'll march out this talking point of January 6th. They'll call everybody insurrectionists, as they're not insurrectionists. I've explained this before. An American insurrectionist would be somebody heavily armed going to the Capitol building, taking the place over and commandeering it and holding refuge to the building. That was not an insurrection. What they deem as an insurrection is just not. You can look it up. It's just not an insurrection. If you look up American history, there's been many insurrections. That is not an insurrection. Now, Biden relating this is the biggest attack on democracy since the Civil War, then that means that we should have a civil war over it and voting rights. That's really what he's saying. And I'm asking, when is the Civil War going to happen? When are we going to have the North separate from the South? And when are we all going to fight each other? So Biden, once again, Biden is calling for a civil war. He is calling for it. There's nothing else. This is unequivocal. If you're saying this is the worst attack since the Civil War, okay, then that justifies a civil war if it's that bad. He jots out the talking points as always is. They're attacking your rights, attacking your liberties. Meanwhile, they're telling you what you can and can't say on Facebook. They're telling you what you can and can't say on social media platforms. They're also asking for you to be banned from all of them if you say anything that objects to the regime. Now, I have next a Freudian slip by Biden, and this is Biden in the exact same. This is hilarious. He must have mixed up his words, or maybe he's just saying what they're all saying in the background. Talking about it doesn't matter who votes, but rather who counts the vote. Put clip 9.
It's no longer just about who gets to vote or making it easier for eligible voters to vote. It's about who gets to count the vote. Who gets to count whether or not your vote counted at all.
That's an important principle. It is who gets to count the vote. It's an important principle to the Biden administration. It's partially, I think, the reason why they were able to win the election. And he kind of had that little Freudian slip. So Biden, they're very woke when it comes to these left-wing voters, because they know they're left-wingers, they know they're going to vote for Democrats. But now when it comes to Republican voters, and I'm not a huge fan of the Republican Party. I don't really associate myself with them. But I definitely would choose them over the Democrat Party, there's no doubt about that. So Cuba, we have the situation in Cuba. I briefly went over the weekend or over the Tuesday program. And now I'm going to hit it again, because it's gotten worse over there is one thing. And the other thing is the messaging from the Democrats. It took them days on end to come out with the message about Cuba, because they don't know how to attack it, because they are communists. So they can't attack the Cuban government as communists. So they kind of dance around the issue, and they made it all about vaccinations, medicines, and then an embargo from America. An embargo which has been going on since 1958. So this suddenly, now there's all these problems, and the embargo has been going on for, 60 years at this point? More than 60 years? And this embargo does not include food or medicine. So for them attacking America, saying these people don't have COVID vaccinations because it's America's fault because of an embargo, that's just not true, because the embargo does not include medication. So it's just another blatant lie by the left wing. But Alejandro Mayorkas, he is our, I think he's, what is he technically? His, the Homeland Security Secretary. Hear what he has to say about Cubans that attempt to escape for political refuge reasons of being politically persecuted, as in being thrown and imprisoned for just speaking out loud. Hear what he has to say about those people attempting to migrate here and escape communism. Play clip 7.
Allow me to be clear. If you take to the sea, you will not come to the United States. The time is never right to attempt migration by sea. To those who risk their lives doing so, this risk is not worth taking. Again, I repeat, do not risk your life attempting to enter the United States illegally. You will not come to the United States.
Yes, so you are not, they know that this is, The Biden administration knows that Cuban voters, in a general sense of Florida, they pretty much tip the scale in Florida every single election year. They overwhelmingly vote Republican because they've experienced communism. Their family, they're not very far removed from experiencing a communist regime, and they know the Democrat Party represents the most communist regime in America right now, the strongest communist regime in America right now. So they know they don't vote for Democrats, they vote for Republicans. Alejandro Mayorkas has no problem taking people through the southern border that are what he thinks is Democrat voters and flying them all over the country to wherever they want and pretty much giving them de facto citizenship in America, telling them, you can request your own court date. Really, you don't have to show up to your court date. You can just be illegal working in America. It's not a problem. We're not going to do anything to you guys. We're going to try to extend DACA. We're going to try to actually bestow upon you some sort of citizenship as soon as we can through some sort of executive action if we can't get it through the legislative branch. Whereas if you're a Cuban American, if you're a Cuban and you're trying to migrate to America to escape political persecution where you're going to be either imprisoned or killed, that's a problem. We're going to send you back to Cuba. And really, this has nothing to do with any type of homeland security laws because they actually reach the standard for being considered political refugees. So this is a completely legal migration to the United States through U.S. code, whereas the immigration that's going on the southern border is overwhelmingly not a legal immigration to the United States. They're seeking political refuge because they're being imprisoned and they're being slaughtered by a communist government. And the United States government doesn't care about that because strictly they are not Democrat voters. That's all it is. This all comes down to politics. They are Republican voters. They vote conservatively. They have very, very traditional values historically, and they've experienced a regime that has slaughtered and killed thousands of people in their homeland country. So they do not the Democrats don't want them in this country. That is the only reason Democrats are turning them back and do not want them. It's strictly because of who they vote for and what their political ideology is. Because they also don't want everyone to understand from these Cubans that come here. They don't want everyone to be alarmed that this communism is going on in the United States. That's another reason. So I have a statement from Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Now, this took her about 3 days to come out with this statement after these Cuban protests. So her statement pretty much just blames America. It's all America's fault, as well as Donald Trump, which is just ridiculous. So she states, and I quote, "We are seeing Cubans rise up and protest for their rights like never before. We stand in solidarity with them, and we condemn the anti-democratic actions led by President Díaz-Canel. The suppression of the media, speech, and protest are all gross violations of civil rights." That's interesting because we're doing that over here. "But we also must name the U.S. contribution to Cuban suffering, our 60-year-old embargo. Last month, once again, the U.N. voted overwhelmingly to call on the United States to lift its embargo on Cuba. The embargo is absurdly cruel, and like too many other U.S. policies targeting Latin Americans, the cruelty is the point. I outright reject the Biden administration's defense of the embargo. It is never acceptable for us to use cruelty as a point of leverage against everyday people." So this was part of her post on Twitter, and then above that she kind of went through and then blamed Donald Trump. She had to add because she attacked Joe Biden. She had to add how bad Donald Trump was the last 4 years on Cuba. It doesn't really matter because he's no longer there anymore. He didn't pass anything through the legislative branch, any type of law. Anything that he did could be retracted by the executive authority. So there's really no point to attack Donald Trump on this because Joe Biden's the one that has to make the move on it now. Joe Biden is the one that has to take accountability. He's the president, right? Now, this suppression of media, speech, and protest to me sounds all too familiar to the United States right now with what's going on with Facebook and the collaboration between Facebook and the Biden administration. Notice how she won't point out or condemn communism in this. She doesn't say anything about communism. She characterized it as anti-democratic actions more than anything. And we're not even a democracy in this country. I love how like everyone just all these politicians continue to confound democracy with republic. They just keep calling us a democracy, which we're not. But it's just funny that she won't even attack communism. It took her 3 days to come out with a statement that's a paragraph long. I could have written a statement within 10-15 minutes like this. I mean, it's not difficult. And once again, the embargo on Cuba does not relate to food or medicine, which are the basic necessities over there in Cuba, considering they're so destitute that they don't really even have hospitals. They have hospitals, but no one gets treated at them. They don't have the supplies. They don't have anything, and it's It's not because it's simply probably because one of the reasons is they don't have the money to buy a lot of these supplies, and then the government doesn't really care about the people there because they're commies. So what I don't know what exactly it is that she's asking for. She doesn't go into any specifics about the embargo and what it entails, and there's a reason for that, because she knows that her political positioning is most likely going to pay off well for her big time viewers and supporters that know nothing. She runs on ignorance. The Democrat Party, in a general sense, kind of just runs on ignorance, hoping that the people that they're talking to don't know anything about politics and what's actually been going on throughout history. So you got 147 people missing over there. I have this post on YouTube, on Twitter, from Spike Cohen. Spike Cohen's like a libertarian Harry Potter lookalike. So Zach Foster reports this. All the people that are missing, and one of them is a libertarian, somebody that's part of the Libertarian Party, and they're number 85 on the list. There's 147 people now currently missing that the Cuban government has just pretty much taken, and no one knows where they are, what's happened to them, if they've been killed, if they've been thrown in some sort of imprisonment program. No one has any clue what's going on there. So, I mean, yeah, that's the communist regime over in Cuba. Not really much more to say on that. It's just funny how the Democrats are just so... I mean, they fall. Everything that they say just falls on deaf ears. There's nothing. They have nothing to say about this. They have nothing. They're not going to condemn communism outright, especially the squad members. I've yet to see one of them name communism and condemn it, because they're communists. So Tucker Carlson, he reported a little bit on this double counting of ballots in Georgia after the Georgia audit. I have a clip from his show. Play clip two.
It's true. Surveillance footage obtained by Voter GA appears to show large numbers of ballots being scanned multiple times. Pay attention in the tape we're showing you to the woman wearing yellow at the desk. According to Voter GA, she slides ballots into a scanning machine, removes the ballots, and then reinserts the same ballots. This happens multiple times. The question is, how many times were those ballots counted? Was each vote counted more than once? Fulton County won't answer that question. Now, one way to know the answer would be to check what are called audit tally sheets. Tellingly, for months after the presidential election, Fulton County failed to provide more than 100,000 of those tally sheets, including 50,000 of them for mail-in ballots. When Voter GA finally forced Fulton County to turn over the tally sheets, the conclusion was stunning. Here's what the audit found. Quote, 7 falsified audit tally sheets containing fabricated vote totals. For example, a batch containing 59 actual ballot images for Joe Biden and 42 for Donald Trump was reported as 100 for Biden and 0 for Trump. The 7 batches of ballot images with 554 votes for Joe Biden, 140 votes for Donald Trump, and 11 votes for Joe Jorgensen had tally sheets in the audit falsified to show 850 votes for Biden, 0 votes for Trump, and 0 votes for Jorgensen. Wait, did you just follow that? How is that not flat-out criminal fraud? We'd love to know, because it certainly sounds like flat-out criminal fraud.
Tucker's show. There's a reason the NSA is going after Tucker. There's a reason that the regime is going after Tucker. Tucker's show is groundbreaking, the information that he brings to the table every single show. And the way in which his opening monologues are, I mean, they're amazing, in essence. And he's been the most outspoken person against the regime so far. So what he's saying is first off, if you're listening on a podcast, there's a woman just running it through the ballot counting machine over and over again, the same amount of ballots, which is obviously illegal. I don't know if it's purposeful. I don't know if maybe she's forgetful and she has some sort of problem. But you see this in the big cities. You saw this and now they're talking about Maricopa County a little bit as well. And some of these big cities that Biden far exceeded the vote that Hillary Clinton got just 4 years prior, like destroyed her, meaning that we're seeing some sort of anomalous like numbers just in these big cities, just in Detroit. This one in specifically is much, it's Atlanta. What was Wisconsin, Milwaukee? We saw these numbers where suddenly there was a random flip to Joe Biden hours after the election when everybody thought Donald Trump had it won, right? Now we have this woman double counting ballots, and then this is even worse. The audit tally sheets were showing that, you know, you had 59 votes for Joe Biden, you had 42 for Donald Trump, but then they would report it in as 100 votes for Biden and 0 for Trump. So that was another way to cheat the system. And then another ballot batch was 554 votes for Joe Biden, 140 votes for Donald Trump. They just reported as 850 for Biden, zero for Trump. So they were counting, they were falsifying ballot counts, really, ballot batches. No one's being held accountable right now. This is Voter GA is the name of the company that did the independent audit. I guess we're going to have to see what's going to happen. I reported this last show. Me reporting this myself, I might get kicked off the platform. Don't really care much. Just continue to follow me on Rumble and Anchor or whatever the podcast platform you use to listen to me. Then I have this other article from Arizona. Arizona audit ballot count and certified count do not match. This is very interesting. They kept counting this over and over again. They're trying to really figure out what's going on. Their Senate president says, who their name is Karen Fan, said that a number of the 2020 general election ballots just do not match the ballots, the ballot totals documented by Maricopa County. So it doesn't really make sense. So they're saying, okay, so Maricopa County, for example, let's say they had 250,000 votes, and their actual general election ballots that they have, it only amounts to 200,000 votes. So they're like, where's the 50,000 that we have written down here as the valid amount of votes? So that's another totally different story to go off on, I guess. I'm just going to have to keep informing you of what's going on here. Everybody knew that this would eventually come to fruition. It was just a matter of time. Everyone on the right side, at least. And the Democrats try to act like it was never a thing. Never happened. They shut down. They suppressed this story as much, which, like I said last show, it's not if it bleeds, it leads. It's if it's good for the Democrat Party, they're going to report it. If it's not good for the DNC, then they're not going to report it. So I have just a couple more articles here. This is the economics portion of the show. Consumer prices see the largest increase since 2008 in the month of June. This is a Human Events piece. It kind of quotes Just the News article. The consumer price index rose 0.9% in June after only rising 0.6% in May. So it's getting worse. Snowballing effect here. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, so straight from the federal government, the increase marks the largest one-month change since June 2008, when the index rose 1% entirely. Over the last year, the all-items index increased 5.4% before seasonal adjustment, which was the largest year increase since the 5.4% increase in August 2008. So what we're seeing is we're seeing numbers that match the 2008 economic crisis, the housing bubble market, banks getting bailed out, big automakers like GM and Ford getting bailed out as well by the federal government. So we're seeing those very similar numbers, and we're going to see what's going to happen here if these companies are going to go belly up and they're going to get bailed out once again by the federal government, which everybody years ago thought it was kind of like a good thing, and then we've kind of found out over the years it was a bad thing to bail out some of these big corporations. We're going to see what ends up happening if we're going to do the same in this case. So actually, I have a Washington Examiner piece, has some more information on this. It's written by Tiana Lowe. Inflation sans food up 2.4% and energy costs are up 24.5%. Overall, still rose 4.5% from June of last year to this one. And it's worth digging into the numbers as a reality check that indeed confirms your life has gotten dramatically more expensive. And she's right about this. Phone bills are up 4.4% from a year ago. And likely thanks to the public school shutdown, elementary and high school tuitions are 3.1% amid a increase, 3.1% amid a spate of new demand. Cable costs are up 5.1% and physician services are up 4.1% more expensive. And that's at the end of a pandemic. With local governments cracking down on vaping, cigarette prices are soaring up 7.3% last year, and the booze boom hasn't stopped, with alcohol prices up 1.9%. And whatever money you saved sleeping in sweatpants for Zoom meetings or schlepping, I don't know what that means, schlepping in sweatpants, in Zoom meetings will be spent quickly. Shoes are 6.5% pricier than last year, and men purchasing pants and women buying dresses to return to the office will find prices up 11.1% and 15.8% for women, respectively. And overall household commodities such as furniture and cleaning products, even without energy prices, are up 8.7%. So actually, if you look at the number of how much food is up, and you look at that 2.4%, it's actually not that bad comparatively to everything else that's pretty substantially up in just 1 year. I mean, you're looking at 5% increase in inflation in 1 year. And that might not even actually be specifically just from inflation. It could additionally be because there's very few workers to do the job, so there's a higher demand, so that raises the price of things. I mean, that as well, but there's definitely inflation as well that contributes to these kind of numbers. It's just ridiculous to think about. You're paying 11% more for your clothes for work, 15% if you're a woman, almost 16%, really? I mean, everybody's going to see this difference in their paycheck. At the end of the year, you're going to notice that you didn't bring home, let's say you lost, you know, let's say 5-10 grand over the last year because of the price of inflation. People will start to notice that you're not saving the same amount of money. You notice it, especially with the food prices in New Jersey, you really do. I was just in Wildwood. Pretty much every single dish is costing you 15 bucks wherever you go. Unless if you go to a mom and pop shop that's taking cash only, then you can only really get a decent price there. Otherwise, you're paying at least a dish. A cheap dish, maybe 12, 13 bucks, but any other normal, if you want a hamburger, a cheeseburger, whatever, you're paying at least 15 bucks for it. Everything is so much higher than it was before. So to get to a couple quick headlines here at the end, as we're nearing the end of the show, race war in South Africa right now is going on. That one's interesting. I really haven't read much into it. There's a lot of politics involved with that. There's a lot of actual codified racist law, I think, against white people. I think that's kind of contributing to this. That is what CRT is in full effect, is what is currently going on in Africa, from what I've been reading and what I understand. Now, House Republicans demand information from the NSA related to Tucker Carlson. That's a Daily Caller piece. Kamala Harris said rural communities can't photocopy IDs. So she was making fun of, I guess, rural communities. She just doesn't. She's so deeply unrelatable. She doesn't really know what she's talking about. And she was saying that, you know, these voting laws are a problem because rural communities don't know how to photocopy their IDs, so they don't know how to vote for that reason. Yeah, so somebody needs to do it for them because they're so stupid. And this is just a weird kind of trope that Democrats have. A trope that I've noticed in Jersey specifically, and I talked to Southerners on the internet on, like, Twitter. New Jersey, they think, like, Southerners are stupid. I don't know what the deal is with that. They think they're stupid. They think they sleep with their cousins. They think they're racist. They think they have like a lot of really negative, almost like elitist type views of Southerners. Like, we're from New Jersey, we're from the North, we're so much more elite than everybody from the South, we're smarter than them. Meanwhile, we're all sitting here paying, you know, $500,000 for a house that over in the South is $170,000. So I don't know really who's much smarter than who. The FCC votes to finalize replacing Huawei equipment in U.S. networks. I think this is a very important story. I just didn't really have time to go over it. So we're seeing an ongoing fight with China. Now we're getting rid of Huawei equipment in U.S. networks. I think we've been kind of trying to get rid of them as well in our electrical infrastructure too, in power plants, a lot of Chinese equipment, because we're worried about the pull that China has, whether or not they can try to infiltrate or they threw some sort of bug or software program that they can control some of this Chinese-made equipment by the Chinese Communist Party. So there's been a lot of prohibitions on Huawei equipment. Huawei phones, I know, aren't allowed to be sold in the United States. We have a lot of rules because we're worried about China spying on our people. And also, obviously, I mean, we have our own government that's spying on us as well that we have to worry about too now. So I don't think this is a bad move. I think taking them off the New York Stock Exchange, taking a bunch of telecommunications companies, I think it's all for good reason. They're kind of continuing in the walking in the footsteps of the past administration. We're going to continue to see how strong they are on China. Rhetorically, with rhetoric, they're not really strong on China, but their actions seem to be somewhat strong on China. But we're going to see what happens when China goes to take Taiwan and all these other things as they transpire. We'll report that. So I greatly appreciate everybody tuning in. As always, had a long week. It was good. You kind of get old after a while after being away from home. You like to get home and sleep in your own bed. That's always nice, though, to go on vacation. So, yeah, I greatly appreciate everybody tuning in. As always, please drop the mic. Let people know about the podcast. Make sure you subscribe on Rumble because I don't know how long I'm really going to be around on YouTube. Subscribe on whatever podcast network you're on because that'll be the best place to listen to me where I feel like, at least at this point, I'm immune from the big tech oligarchs from taking me down or the Biden administration taking my show off the platforms. So yeah, do that for me. I would greatly appreciate it. And I everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy your weekend, and I will see you all. And you know what, this next week, another housekeeping thing, I don't think I'm going to have the Federalist Papers because I didn't have any time this past week to work on them. Sometimes I pre-record them. So once again, it's just going to be it's just going to be the current event show. I'm going to have it Tuesday going into Wednesday, and then I'm going to have a weekend special, and then that next week coming up, we're going to continue the Federalist Paper podcast. I think it's Federalist number 79 on the Supreme Court, so we're going to get all that squared away, and yeah, that'll be it. So everybody enjoy their weekend. I will see you all next time, and thank you.